Chapter 4. After dessert, a tiramisu so good it left them temporarily speechless, they walked back to the B&B, grabbed the BMW's keys from the room, and set off for Princess Anne, heading northwest up Highway 12 to the outskirts of Salisbury before turning southwest onto Highway 13. The evening's earlier clear skies had given way to low rain clouds, and a fine, steady mist fell on the BMW's windshield. Remy frowned. It feels like you're going too fast. She enjoyed the BMW, but not the latent race car driver urge it brought out in her husband. Dead on the speed limit. Don't worry, Remy. Have I ever crashed? Well, there was that time in Mumbai. Oh, no, if you'll recall, the tires were almost bald and we were being chased by a very angry man in a very big dump truck. Plus, I didn't crash. I just got sidetracked. That's one way of putting it. An accurate description, I'd say. Okay, then there was the time in Scotland. Okay, that was my fault. Don't feel bad, Sam. That peat bog did jump right in front of us out of nowhere. Very funny. You got us out of it, though, and that's what counts. And he did. Using a short coil of rope, the car jack, a stump and a branch for leverage, and some well-applied basic physics. They drove in silence, watching the darkened countryside slide by until finally the lights of Princess Anne appeared a half mile down the road. Named after the daughter of King George II, the town, or Hamlet, as many locals demanded it be called, boasted a population of 2,200 souls, not counting the students who called University of Maryland Eastern Shore their home. During their first trip here years ago, Sam and Remy had agreed, if not for the cars on the streets and the electric lighting, it would take little effort to imagine you'd been transported back to Maryland's pre-revolutionary days, so quaint were parts of the hamlet of Princess Anne. Sam took Highway 13 into the middle of town and turned east onto Mount Vernon Road, which he followed for a mile before turning north onto East Ridge Road. They were now on the outskirts of Princess Anne. Frobisher's shop, whose second floor served as his apartment, was set a quarter mile back from the road down a long driveway bordered by maple trees. As Sam reached the turn-in, a black Buick Lucerne sedan pulled out of the driveway and passed them, heading south to Mount Vernon Road. As the BMW's lights washed over the passing car's windshield, Sam caught a glimpse of Ted Frobisher sitting in the passenger seat. "That was him," Remy said.
"Yeah, I know," Sam muttered distantly.
"What is it?"
"Don't know.
Something about his face didn't seem right." "What are you talking about?"
"He looked scared."
Ted Frobisher always looked scared. Or annoyed. Those are his only two expressions, you know that.
"Yeah, maybe," Sam muttered, swinging the BMW into a precise Y-turn, backing into the driveway, then heading after the Lucerne.
"Oh, boy," Remy said. "Here we go."
"Just humor me. Probably nothing."
"Fine. But if they pull into an IHOP, promise me you'll turn around and leave the poor man alone."
"Deal."
The Lucerne did not pull into an IHOP, nor did it stay on the main road for very long, turning south onto Black Road after only a few miles. The street lights had long since disappeared, leaving Sam and Remy driving in pitch blackness. The earlier drizzle had turned to a steady rain, and the BMW's windshield wipers beat out a rhythmic, squeaking thump.
"How's your night vision?" Sam asked her.
"Good. Why?"
In response, Sam turned off the BMW's headlights and accelerated, closing the distance to the Lucerne's taillights. Remy looked at her husband, her eyes narrowed.
"You're really worried, aren't you?"
He nodded, jaw clenched.
"Just a feeling. Hope I'm wrong."
"Me too."
"You're scaring me a little, Sam."
He reached over and gave her thigh a squeeze.
"Now, have I ever gotten us into trouble?"
"Well, there was the time..."
"Without getting us back out again?"
"No."
Do we have a signal? He asked. Remy pulled out her cell phone and checked the reception.
Nothing.
Damn. We still have that map? Remy rummaged through the glove compartment, found the map, and opened it. After 30 seconds, she said,
Sam, there's nothing out here.
No houses, no farms, nothing for miles. Curiouser and curiouser. Ahead, the Lucerne's brake lights flashed once, then again, then turned right and disappeared behind some trees. Sam pulled up to the turn and slowed just in time to see the Lucerne's taillights turn again, this time left into a driveway about 100 yards down the road. He turned off the engine and rolled down the passenger window. Through the trees, they could see the Lucerne's headlights go out, followed by the sound of a car door opening, then closing, followed 10 seconds later by another. Then a voice.
Hey, don't!
Frobisher's voice, clearly agitated.
Well, that settles it, Sam said.
Yep, Remy said. What do you want to do?
You drive to the nearest house or wherever you can get reception and call the police.
I'm going to...
Oh, no, you're not, Sam.
Remy, please.
I said no, Sam.
Sam groaned.
Remy... We're wasting time.
Sam knew his wife well enough to recognize the tone in her voice and the set of her mouth. She'd planted her feet, and that was that.
Okay, he said. But no stupid chances, okay?
That goes for you, too.
He grinned at her and winked.
Am I anything but the epitome of caution?
Then, don't answer that.
In for a penny. Remy started.
In for trouble, Sam finished.